This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Teresa Wills. After weeks of negotiations, Republican senators in Washington are delaying a vote on their version of a health care overhaul bill. The legislation is designed to repeal and replace the Affordable Care Act. But a number of Republican senators have come out against leadership's most recent proposal, including West Virginia Senator Shelley Moore Capito. Capito says now she will offer her own changes to the bill. Ashton Mara reports.
And I waited for changes. They never came.
Senator Shelley Moore Capito says she knew more than a week ago that she could not support the Senate Republican-backed health care bill. The senator, however, did not formally make a statement about the stance until after Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell announced Tuesday he's delaying a vote because of opposition in his caucus. Capito says the delay will give senators more time to make changes to the bill, some of which she has offered in previous discussions. Specifically, Capito says she wants the bill to include subsidies that help make health care more affordable for low-income Americans. She wants an additional $45 billion included for opioid and substance abuse treatment programs. And she says the bill does not include enough funding for Medicaid, the national health care program that provides insurance for hundreds of thousands of low-income and disabled West Virginians.
I don't think it's good for West Virginia. I've heard from West Virginians. I can see for myself what it does. And I am opposed to the direction that bill was going.
State and national groups have targeted Capito during the past several weeks, attempting to influence her vote on the bill. Many of those efforts are continuing, with a final vote now expected after Congress's 4th of July break. Democratic Senator Joe Manchin has expressed opposition to the Republican health care plan since the House of Representatives approved its proposal in early May. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Ashton Mara.
Now that the Senate Republicans have postponed a bill on the health care bill, more people are getting a look at the health bill's likely effects. Some people living with disabilities don't like what they see. Mary Meehan explains that proposed changes to Medicaid could cut some important services.
Jake Parsons is a young man with dimples and an easy smile, sharing a little about his life and how, as someone living with a disability, he's able to do what he does.
I am 24 years old. I'm a member of the Kentucky Star Wars Collectors Club, and I have two jobs. I'm also a registered voter, and I vote in almost every election.
The audience of caregivers and advocates for the disabled hope stories like Parsons will show what's at stake with possible health care changes.
Workers help me go do things like swimming, doing sports, walking the dog, and shopping. If I didn't have a job coach, I would have to stay home a lot without having a job, which would be kind of boring.
According to the Kaiser Family Foundation, nearly 760,000 people with disabilities in Kentucky, West Virginia, and Ohio depend on Medicaid. Jeff Edwards is executive director of Kentucky Prevention and Advocacy. He says those people need the services Medicaid pays for to lead independent lives.
All of a sudden, they are becoming third and fourth class citizens because they don't have the same choices that everyone else does. They don't have the expectation of living and being a part of the community like everybody else does.
The bill being considered in the Senate fundamentally changes how Medicaid is paid for. States would operate under a funding cap and could cut services they consider optional. Aviva Arendine is a senior fellow at the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities. She says, for example, services to some children with disabilities from middle-class families could be considered optional.
States facing big losses in federal funding might conclude that those are places they have to make cuts. This would be completely unprecedented.
Many assume that there must be some backup in place. But Arendine says,
for millions of Americans, there is no plan B.
That leaves health advocates scrambling to understand the impact of the bill, but fearing the worst. For the Ohio Valley Resource, I'm Mary Meehan in Lexington, Kentucky.
The Ohio Valley Resource is made possible with support from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and West Virginia Public Broadcasting. National opposition for the bill is mounting as more and more groups release reports about the negative impacts the current health care bill could have on access to treatment in rural areas, like much of West Virginia. Kara Lofton reports.
The Chartis Center for Rural Health released an analysis of both the House and Senate versions of the replacement bill Wednesday. Chartis is a national firm that provides strategic and economic planning services to some of the largest health care providers in the country. According to the group's findings, if Congress follows through with the proposed cuts to Medicaid, rural health care providers could lose nearly $1.5 billion of revenue per year. This comes at a time when 41% of rural hospitals are already operating with budget deficits, and many others have closed due to financial strain. The continued loss of revenue, according to the Chartist report, could result in additional closures, leaving rural Americans with fewer options when it comes to health care. But the impact of rural health systems is larger than access to treatment, the report says. It's also economic. If the Senate's version of the bill to repeal and replace the Affordable Care Act would pass, the Chartist Center estimates 34,000 community and health care jobs would be lost. States that expanded Medicaid, like West Virginia, are estimated to experience nearly twice that number. West Virginia Senators Shelley Moore Capito and Joe Manchin have both said that they have concerns over the bill's impacts on West Virginia. The actions by the Republican majority this week likely means the bill will see changes before being put to a final vote in the Senate. For Appalachia Health News, I'm Kara Lofton.
This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Teresa Wills. It's 7:50. Areas of fog this morning, becoming mostly sunny today with highs in the 80s, partly cloudy tonight with lows in the 50s and 60s, partly sunny Friday, a slight chance of rain and thunderstorms with highs in the 80s. Rain and thunderstorms continue Friday night and Saturday. Lows Friday night in the 50s and 60s and highs on Saturday in the 70s and 80s. Support for the weather forecast is provided by Erie Insurance, putting service first since 1925. Local agents available at erieinsurance.com. For the past month, A Change of Tune has highlighted a variety of singers, songwriters, and bands who contribute to the state's wild and wonderful music scene. 30 days, 30 West Virginia music interviews. And for tomorrow's season finale, host Joni Deutsch speaks to Tim O'Brien, one of the figureheads of West Virginia music, who has a grasp of the state's musical past and future success.
So based on your experience and your knowledge of West Virginia's music history, what is at the heart of West Virginia music?
It's hard to say what makes West Virginia music so vibrant, but I think that the audience is there for you, and it nurtures some sort of independence, I think. We're kind of off the track in West Virginia, and anything that anybody has to offer in the arts is really kind of, it's really of value to anybody, I think. There's a crowd that will come forward and just eat it up. They'll just eat it right out of your hand. I think that's a big part of it. I also, you know, obviously the bluegrass music and old-time music is a product of the culture and the history of it, where you had the Scots-Irish people move into the mountains and mixing with the landscape, and they're also later on mixing with the African-American element that came in when the coal mines were so big and the railroads were being built. And it's a real working-class place, and everybody's kind of on the same page in West Virginia. I think even, you know, the richest guy walking down the street will talk to the guy that's sweeping the street, you know. They know each other. It's a small town. It's a small-town atmosphere. You know, I think about that song, John Henry, and how it spread. You know, it's a legend of this guy who beat the steam drill, and it was spread by black and white workers, and that's some of the first times when white people and black people were working alongside one another and living one side another was in those days when the railroads were being built, the tunnels were being dug, and in the coal mines into the 20th century, same kind of thing would happen, and I don't know. West Virginia's, there's a hope, like I say. There's some kind of special mix, and the landscape has something to do with it, I think. There's something in the water, maybe, but the landscape and the just the fact that it's off the track has bred a certain thing.
You have accomplished a ton since you first began as a musician. for anyone that's listening that wants to follow in what you've been able to do, what advice would you be able to give them from one West Virginia musician to another?
Well, I think you have to follow your heart, and you have to work hard, and you need to find an intersection of what it is that drives you with a need from the audience. You know, it's like you can do what you like to do if you just find the part of it that will connect with people. You know, you can get help. It's not anything that you can do on your own, and it's smart to ask for a little help and advice. And the people are out there; they're there in the state, and they're outside of the state as well. But I think you know, young people playing music and trying to make a career, you just have to stick to your guns, and you have to find a way to do it. I mean, I have a friend, Danny Barnes, who says, if you want to be an artist, get your expenses down really, really low. So maybe living in West Virginia might be a good idea, because, you know, it's cheaper to live there than a lot of places. But I would just, you know, I would follow your heart and work hard and try to find a way through the crowd and a way to connect to people.
From the time that you were in West Virginia living here as a kid to now, has your perspective changed? Has your sense of hope changed for the state and its music?
I didn't really ever think about West Virginia being a poor place when I was growing up. And I was kind of shocked. I remember when Lyndon Johnson launched the War on Poverty, and he was talking about Appalachia on Walter Cronkite. This guy would talk about Appalachia and Lyndon Johnson's War on Poverty. And I remember watching that with my dad, and I said, Dad, it said all of West Virginia is Appalachia and it's all poor. I said, we're not poor, are we? He said, no, we're not poor. But, you know, we were well-to-do. But it's kind of a shock to realize that, you know, you're kind of sheltered. And the TV age kind of started to fix that, I guess. But leaving the state and seeing what's possible in big cities, for instance, for musicians, there's a bigger audience, college town. I guess I could have learned that by going to Morgantown and playing for kids. You need a young audience to play to start out, I think. You know, it's been such a long time since I lived in West Virginia. I left at 19 and now I'm 63, so you do the math. But I lived in Colorado longer than I lived in West Virginia, and now I've lived in Tennessee longer than I've lived in West Virginia, but the state sort of still lives inside me.
That was Grammy Award-winning West Virginian Tim O'Brien speaking with A Change of Tune's Joni Deutsch. You can hear the rest of that interview tomorrow on wvpublic.org/wvmusic. Support for 30 Days of West Virginia Music is provided by Kinship Goods, proud supporter of DIY Music and the Arts. Local, shipped worldwide at kinshipgoods.com. West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. You can keep up with the latest West Virginia news throughout the day on our website, wvpublic.org. Support for our news bureaus comes from West Virginia University, Concord University, Marshall University, and Shepherd University. Our producer is Ashton Mara. I'm Teresa Wills.
Kara Lofton, Appalachia Health News lead reporter. I write about health, not just about nutrition and physical activity, but also about diseases and breaking down health policy, like what is going on with the Affordable Care Act and what's going to happen to Medicaid. I do this through stories about things that matter to you, your family, your kids, and your community. Your sustaining gift helps protect West Virginia Public Broadcasting. Donate at wvpublic.org.
West Virginia has the highest drug overdose death rate in the country. On the next Fresh Air, Margaret Talbot talks about her New Yorker story, The Addicts Next Door, detailing the impact of the opioid epidemic in poor West Virginia towns. Also, actor Sam Elliott. If you don't know the name, you'll recognize his voice and mustache. He stars in the new film, The Hero. Join us.
That's coming up at 3 o'clock this afternoon and again at 8 on West Virginia Public Broadcasting.
Hi, I'm Jim Lang, host of Eclectopia.
And I'm Joni Deutsch, hostess of A Change of Tune.
And you can now hear our shows back to musical back.
Tune in to Eclectopia Friday nights at 10 and now Saturday nights at 11.
And discover new music on A Change of Tune now, Fridays at 11 and Saturdays at 10.
That's a lot of cool music with a lot of cool people.
And those people are you.
So tune in Friday and Saturday nights starting at 10 for good times and great tunes.
Get it?
Got it.
Good.